Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Ben, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Ben. Good morning.
Good morning. So we're about a month or so into 2017, and we've yet to talk about what we've got on the horizon. We're still, all of us, I think, are still in the midst of catching up with what we'd like to see in 2016, or see from 2016 as the Oscar night approaches. But we thought we'd take a quick break and talk about what we're excited about in 2017, and it's a pretty big year. I feel like we kind of say that every year, but we definitely have some major auteurs that are releasing new movies this year, and we have, potentially, and we have some major franchises that I think we're pretty big fans of that are being added to this year. And I think that, for me, the movies fall into one of those categories. So I really am not too familiar. Obviously, nothing on my list is going to be, you know, anything brand new that I don't know from an existing filmmaker or property. I don't really seek things out based on actor or writer or anything like that, although maybe I should. But is that kind of how your list is organized as well?
I have a few different categories, actually. And it starts with just the movies I'm most excited to see from my favorite directors, movies that are not from existing properties, and are just brand new things I've never seen before, that we've never seen before, coming from the most exciting filmmakers that we have going right now. And then I've got a different category that's sequels and or franchise and or existing properties from great directors who's just movies that I'm just kind of generally interested in. Then I've got comic stuff, because there are six big comic book movies coming out this year. And then I've got a category called Kiss My Ass, I Don't Care.
All right. Well, I like breaking things down in that category, in those categories. How can we do this? Can we combine the comics and the existing franchises to make kind of a rough top five for each of us?
Sure.
And then do those three categories. So we'll do it by filmmaker, by franchise, and by Kiss My Ass categories. Sound good?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm most curious about that one, so let's kick off. And I don't really have that list, so I'll either make up some stuff or just laugh at whatever you say. So what's your number five on that?
Well, so why don't I just run through this whole thing?
Because okay, yeah, why rake this? Go for it.
It's just kind of a problem that we have right now, and just an issue that I have personally with these movies that are being produced. And, you know, I understand the bottom line logic. If it turns out to make money for the studio and it makes more opportunities down the road for other things, fine, whatever. But just in terms of the films and stories and existing properties and the art itself, I don't care. I just really don't. And it frustrates me that, and we've had conversations like this in the past where these filmmakers and studios come up with these, they don't come up with ideas, they use existing ideas that have laid all of the groundwork for these projects, and they're just doing it seemingly just to do it in hopes that they might make money because people have a passing familiarity with the existing properties. And so I've got six movies on this list, and they're basically movies that have already been made, and these are movies that are just not going to come close to making them as well as the originals. So, I mean, in the past we talked about movies like RoboCop and Poltergeist and things like that, where it's just like in Point Break, where you're just using the name of an existing movie that people like, and you're making an inferior remake of it just to do it in hopes that you make some money. In some cases that works out, in most cases it doesn't. So on this list, I've got Stephen King's It, The Mummy, which I know isn't – look, I know that there have been multiple mummy movies made, and this is a Tom Cruise movie that basically looks like World War Z crossed with Mission Impossible, and maybe it'll be fun, but it's called The Mummy, so it belongs on this list. Jumanji in Murder on the Orient Express, which is being made by Kenneth Branagh. Maybe it's good, but don't make a movie called Murder on the Orient Express, because there's a real famous movie called Murder on the Orient Express that already exists, and you're not it. Then there's Flatliners, which is it's not a remake even. It's a sequel to the movie called Flatliners. So you make Flatliners, then you make Flatliners 2, but instead of Flatliners 2, you call it Flatliners. So, no.
I hate that so much. I'm so mad. I was not expecting to be this angry this early in the day.
And so then the last one, and I know I don't consider this controversial. None of this is really controversial. Beauty and the Beast. And this one bugs me. In these live-action Disney movies, kind of bug me in general. We've done an FNU of Craig about it. But this one more than anything, because they're just blatantly flat out just making the animated movie with live action and CG. They're just that's all they care about doing. There's nothing new that they're bringing to this. And any reason for this movie's existence, it has everything to do with what we saw in 1991 with that animated movie. And every bit of marketing is tied into the music, the overall design of that. And I get it. They've done it several times now with Cinderella and Jungle Book, and they're going to do it again. But, and look, Bill Condon could make a sumptuous live-action version of this story that everybody loves, and it's probably going to make $600 million. But I don't know. It fundamentally just sort of makes me shiver a little bit, and it belongs in this category for me.
Wow. Well, I see your point on that, but my wife, that's by far and away her most anticipated movie of the year for those reasons. And, again, I feel like those things are so clearly marketing things. You know, they're trying to recapture magic. They're nostalgic, which isn't the best reason to make a movie. But I do feel like they're carbon copies. But I do feel like there's some kind of love that goes into them. So I hesitate to just write them off. For me, I'm surprised this isn't on your list. For me, by far the number one movie of the year that I am just insulted by and angered by is The Emoji Movie. And I think that every single person that was responsible for that film that wasn't the person that said, "No, guys, we don't do this. This is not what we do." Whoever didn't say that should lose their job and should work in a different industry, because I understand that, you know, we're here to make money and we're here to, you know, give people things that they will pay for. But along with that, there is a responsibility to give people things that are good for them or that are somehow edifying. It's not happening in an emoji movie when your poster is the poop emoji. It's the most infuriating thing that I've seen come into the movie theater in a long time. So that's far and away the more insulting one. I guess another one on this list for me is Power Rangers. Just based on the trailers, it just looks like Divergent adjace with Iron Man suits that you got from Party City. It just doesn't look good. It looks like bad teen psychodrama. It doesn't have any of the kitsch or camp of the series, it looks like. And it's selling Power Rangers based on, like, the teenage drama, which if I made a list of all the things that I liked about Power Rangers when I was 10 years old, teenage drama wouldn't even be in the top 10. Yeah, that's probably my distant number two. And then the rest of the things you mentioned are probably on that list as well for me.
Yeah, The Emoji Movie is weird because you're exactly right about everything you said. And I saw it on the list and I just thought, yeah, that belongs here. That's infuriating. But then I thought, like, watch it be good, you know? Like, it's
no.
Weird. No, I know it probably won't be because Rob Riggle's in it, so definitely it won't be, but...
rarely fold my arms and say no, but I'm not going to give that a chance. I don't care. If you can make a good emoji movie, guess what? You can make a great movie that isn't an emoji movie. So go make that movie instead, and do not sell us this garbage.
Co-starring Sir Patrick Stewart. And, yeah, I know. And guess what? Sir Patrick Stewart plays the poop emoji.
Well, you know how you spell Stewart is with a money sign for the S.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a shame, and I'm looking at the poster now, and the tagline is "It's not easy being meh," M-E-H, and it's a sarcastic emoji, and it's like, you know, one of those yellow smiley face emoji, and it has blonde bangs. So we should probably move on.
Boy, I don't want to get an explicit tag on iTunes, but I mean, I'm so close to just screaming the F word as loud as I can. All right, moving on. Let's go to the franchises. It's hard to rank this for me because there are so many good ones, and maybe we can just kind of go down the list with things that should get an honorable mention. But I guess at my number five, I'll start and I'll say Guardians of the Galaxy 2, or Volume 2, rather. I really like the first film. It gets better on repeat viewings. And this trailer that Marvel has released, or the trailers at least, it looks like James Gunn, you know, took all the goodwill from the first movie and the extra budget that he got for this and really amped up the visuals. Obviously, there's elements of that film that could, if, you know, in Iron Man 2 tradition, or Dead Man's Chest, Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, there's funny things about the first movie that could be inflated for the sequel and become absolutely obnoxious and annoying. But if that doesn't happen, this looks like an improvement on the first one, and visually it looks like they are really going for some wonderful, wonderful imagery.
Yeah, I'll buy that. I'll put that one on my list. That's when, you know, obviously the list of six comic movies coming out. And I would say, above all, that would be the one I'm looking forward to most out of the six.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, I guess by process of elimination, why not? Because, I mean, that Guardians of the Galaxy is considered by many among, like, a top five Marvel movie. Am I wrong?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, and, you know, on repeat viewing, it's definitely gotten better for me. You know, at first it worked fine, but, you know, I didn't like it as much as some of the others, but now I like it a lot more. Yeah, I'll go with that for my number five, if you want to go to your number four.
Okay, my number four is another Marvel movie. It's Spider-Man Homecoming, which I know we have had 6 billion Spider-Man movies, but I feel like, you know, based on what we saw in Civil War, this one is looks like they've gotten a lot of things right. The trailer for this doesn't look spectacular, I don't think, but again, I'm excited to see more from Tom Hollander as Spider-Man.
Okay, well, since you already talked about Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm just going to go ahead and go two in a row and say this is my number five. I'll go with the movie coming out pretty soon, in about a month, March 10th, Kong Skull Island.
Okay.
Yeah, obviously the King Kong franchise, I guess. Yes. I mean, it's another King Kong movie, so that idea on its own doesn't really get me going. And honestly, I wasn't super thrilled about this initially, even with the stacked cast that it has. And you know, once they changed the name from Skull Island to Kong : Skull Island, right, I got a little more bummed out. But then I saw the trailer, like the latest trailer, and I thought, you know what, like this looks all kinds of weird and maybe a little dumb and silly, and I kind of jumped on board right after that. So I'm in for this, at the very least, at the bottom of my most anticipated list.
Yeah, I'm excited for it as well. You know, the title bugs me as well. The trailers look really cool, but I'm not a big fan of Kings of Summer, the filmmaker's last movie. And there is a tremendous amount of marketing stuff for this. They just released a new kaiju themed poster, which is really cool. And they had like an Apocalypse Now type poster as well. So there's all these things that they're doing that it's like, well, that's cool, but I'm trying not to get swept away by the marketing, you know.
Yeah, and
I
like, feel how's like the movie though? You know,
it's yeah,
like,
exactly.
Posters are great, and are we? It's kind of like the Jurassic World issue, you know?
Right. They're selling us based on how much we like all these other things, and that kind of worries me.
If we could have made posters, you know, back in 1933 for King Kong, this is what we would have done. You know what I mean? This is what would have been cool. This is fanfic, and oh yeah, we got to make this movie too. Let's hope that's good. So,
oh, you like Apocalypse kinda... Now? Here's a poster about King Kong. That's kind of the same.
Yeah, so, and then my next one is Fate and the Furious, which is also coming out soon, April 14th. And you know, we talked about this at length a couple of Fast and Furious movies ago, I think, and how much we just kind of like this franchise and what it's morphed into. And we're both obviously very sad to see Paul Walker go, and you know that obviously Universal wasn't going to stop making this, you know, money machine that it's become for the studio, and it's become so dependable as this just global movie franchise that has just absolutely sort of obliterated what its foundation in terms of just being kind of a small streetcar cops and robbers movie. Now it's become this just like espionage saga, and it's just a ton of ridiculous dumb fun done the right way, and I love what I've seen so far from these trailers. It just sort of fits the bill, and they just keep trying to go bigger and bigger and bigger, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the same way. It narrowly missed my top five or so, this new one looks crazy. I'm not as confident in the director. I haven't liked as many F. Gary Gray movies as I have with Justin Lin, but still, it looks like they're very consistent, and just the continued pairing of Statham and The Rock is quite exciting for me. It's what the Expendables should have been, basically, is what it's turned into. So my number three is. It's tough. It's a tough pick, but I think I'm going to go with War of the Planet of the Apes, especially after this recent trailer. Matt Reeves is back, and just the way he's telling this story of monkeys taking over the planet is so it's got so much gravity, and it's got so much drama to it, but it's still it's in a way fun. It's this weird Shakespearean ape thing, we've got Woody Harrelson here as kind of the last leader of the humans. It just looks like all the quality of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which made my top 10 of 2014, is retained, and there looks to be snow, which is cool for some reason. I'm very excited for this.
Definitely. My number three is Trainspotting 2. Danny Boyle is back. He's reassembled entire cast, and you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know that we were necessarily clamoring for Trainspotting 2. From what I've heard, Ewan McGregor wasn't really interested in doing it, you know, unless I guess a script came along, and I guess one did, and if it's good enough for Danny Boyle and get cast all back together, then I guess it's good enough for me. I love the first Trainspotting movie so much, and I see a lot of that DNA here in the second one, even many years later, and it looks like an old-school Danny Boyle movie to me, and seems to have that feeling, and you know, I can't wait for that, because, I mean, he's become just such an electrifying filmmaker. I loved his last movie, Steve Jobs, so much, and to see him, you don't love seeing somebody as vibrant, necessarily treading old ground, but I guess just for the sake of this list, I'll make an exception for Trainspotting 2.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the original movie. I mean, I can appreciate the craft of it. But, yeah, my interest in this is basically entirely because of the success of Steve Jobs, which I also love. So, you know, I will try to give this a shot whenever it does come out. So that was my number two, and I just realized I need to probably switch my number four out with something else. So I said it was Spider-Man. I'm just going to totally redo that real quick before I move on to my number two. My number four should be Logan.
Just a great trailer, a great setup for a final Wolverine movie. It does look more refreshing than Spider-Man, so I guess that's why it kind of takes that spot. And I think that I'm a much bigger fan of the Wolverine than I expected to be, especially the work of James Mangold, who I think is a really underrated director. I'm excited to see him kind of have even more free reign here. The story is just packed with emotion, just based on the amount of time that we've spent with these characters, not necessarily because of the quality of all the movies, although there have been some really great ones, and the best part of those movies in some cases have been Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman, who are coming back here. So, yeah, I'm just intrigued to see how they wrap all this stuff up, and I'm staying away from trailers. And, yeah, it's just everything about this movie is pulling me in. So that should have been my number four. So I hate Spider-Man. And then my number two, did you have any thoughts on Logan before I move on to number two?
No, not really.
Okay. My number two is Thor Ragnarok, which is being directed by Taika Waititi, who directed the phenomenal What We Do in the Shadows and Hunt for the Wilder People, both really, really funny, fun movies. So I'm kind of excited to see him bring his tone to a Marvel movie. And at that, a Marvel movie that features not just Thor, who's not necessarily my favorite Avenger, but also the Hulk. This has basically been pitched as a buddy cop movie with the Thor and Hulk in space, which sounds great. And Hulk being one of my top five probably favorite superheroes or so, I'm excited that we kind of get a fake Hulk movie. And plus, I think there's a big presence of Doctor Strange that's supposed to be in this one. So it seems like they're taking the Thor series, which has been, for me, a little bit underwhelming, and really just juicing it up with the fringes of the Marvel Universe. And I think that's a really fun way to take this series.
Yeah, for sure. I really like Thor the Dark World. It snuck up on me, and it's, to me, one of the more underrated movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I know you sort of feel that way, but you always hate on it when you get
it's the worst one, but it's still a good movie.
No, it's not. It's really not. Like, I don't know what it was, but that movie's just a lot of fun, and the character is obviously a lot of fun, and it's usually a big highlight of the Avengers movies. And but for all the reasons you said, absolutely. I mean, if you're talking about pairing Thor and Hulk and tossing a little Doctor Strange in there, set in space and just getting weird for a couple of hours, yeah, let's do it. Like, it's not on my list necessarily, but among the comic stuff, it's definitely top half.
Yeah, and I mean, part of it also reminds me of the Defenders comic book, which is kind of one of my most underrated Marvel teams, which is Doctor Strange, the Hulk, Silver Surfer, and I, like, you know, it kind of feels like maybe you could just swap Silver Surfer out for Thor here. So, yeah, it kind of feels like a version of the Defenders, which is fun, too, and that's just my thing. So what's your number two?
My number two is War for the Planet of the Apes, and basically everything you said is true, and it was on my top 10 of that year when Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was when it came out, and Matt Reeves absolutely crushed it, making his best movie so far. And gosh, like, it totally blew me away, because I really liked Rise of the Planet of the Apes and thought, like, wow, I didn't know that a new Planet of the Apes movie could be this good. And then Matt Reeves absolutely, he didn't make me forget about the Planet of the Apes, but man, he just brought it to a different level. So I'm glad he's continuing this story, and it looks like he's upping the ante once again. And like you said, no builds, and Woody Harrelson looks scary and dangerous. And yeah, I mean, he made one of the better war movies in recent memories, and movies about violence in recent memories with the last one. And man, I can't wait to do it again, and I don't normally feel that way about sequels.
Yeah, absolutely. And then my number one is surprisingly, it's a DC movie, and it's Wonder Woman. And it's not, that's not based on, really, obviously, not a big fan of Man of Steel or Batman v Superman or Suicide Squad. But my excitement is based entirely on the trailer and on Gal Gadot's performance in Batman v Superman. We're finally getting the big female-led superhero movie that we've always wanted. We're getting the Wonder Woman movie that has been in development for decades now. Based on that first trailer, it looks awesome. I like the World War I approach. The cinematography looks fantastic. The action scenes look fantastic, and it's a neat approach to have Chris Pine as the, you know, the damsel in distress, as it were. So yeah, everything about this is has got me very excited, and I think it could be a huge change in direction for the DC universe. And I'm always hoping that their next thing turns out to be great. So Wonder Woman is my most anticipated franchise movie of the year.
Fair enough. I think it looks really good too. It's got a really super strong trailer, and you know, people seem to like Gal Gadot in Batman vs. Superman and like her in general, and the design of this looks really, really good. It's one of the best looking DC movies that we've seen, strictly based on the 5 minutes or so of stuff we've seen so far. So yeah, I'm with it. I'm all the way. I'll check it out. I don't know about all the way, I shouldn't say that, but I'm there. So my number one, so I was talking to my dad the other day. We had just gone to see the movie Lion, and we were leaving, and he had mentioned, I think Hal Ashby came up, and he mentioned that he had heard that there was a Last Detail sequel coming out. And I thought, like, what? That's stupid. Like, why would you do that? And I even said that to him, and I just thought, like, ugh, gross. And then as I was just doing my research, I thought to myself, you know, like, I need to make sure, because all these great filmmakers have movies coming out this year, I need to make sure that a super prolific filmmaker that I love doesn't have a movie coming out, so I don't, you know, in case I forget about him. And I was like, what has Richard Linklater got coming out? And he's got a movie coming out called Last Flag Flying, and it is a sequel to The Last Detail. And
wow.
It's based on the novel of the same name, Last Flag Flying, by the same guy who wrote The Last Detail. So I've hit a bit of a conundrum here. I've got a conflict of emotions swirling through my brain. Because I love The Last Detail. That movie's great. And Hal Ashby is just such a unique and singular guy and an artist who has really set himself apart, in my opinion. And I still have a lot of his movies to see, and The Last Detail was a big deal when I watched it. And so to learn initially that there was a sequel, and it seemed like one of those things where it's like, oh no, somebody's cashing in on this. If Richard Linklater is doing it, even though this is the same guy who remade The Bad News Bears for apparently no good reason, if this Richard Linklater, as he is right now, is making time for this and is casting it with Bryan Cranston is in the lead, then okay, I'm with it. Because Linklater is one of my top guys, and this is coming from Amazon Studios, who seem to have good heads on their shoulders in terms of movies that they give a chance. You know, they made The Neon Demon and obviously made a huge deal to put Manchester by the Sea out there. And so I've kind of done a reverse here for this Last Detail sequel, Last Flag Flying. If Richard Linklater's making it, I'm 100% in. So that's my number one in terms of the franchises and sequels.
Wow, what a snob. What a movie snob. An Ashby sequel for your franchise. Well, that sounds great. I guess what? I haven't seen The Last Detail, so maybe this will be a good reason for me to check it out, because I do love Hal Ashby.
Yeah, so the only comic movie we didn't cover, which I assume is in your Kiss My Ass folder, is Justice League.
No, it's not there. It's just not in the top five. I mean, I am not encouraged by the movies that have led up directly to it. I'm not encouraged by the director. I'm really not encouraged by the Comic-Con sizzle reel or whatever that they released. It just feels like, seems like the same thing, but somebody gave Snyder some notes to throw in jokes, and guess who shouldn't be writing jokes? Zack Snyder. So yeah, it's not, I'll see it for sure. It's a Justice League movie. You know, it's presumably going to be a Superman movie. So I will be there, but it keeps falling off my radar. because I'm just, I don't, why at this point, you know, I've been hit three times. I've been hit twice by this particular filmmaker, three times by this franchise. So, you know, what reason do I have other than a good looking trailer like I have for Wonder Woman to think that anything is going to change? But that's where I'm at.
All right.
I did totally fail to mention, because I shuffled my franchises and my comic books up and left out a major one, and also because I almost considered this more of an auteur movie based on Denis Villeneuve and Roger Deakins' past collaborations, but Blade Runner 2049 should probably be my number one on any list of franchises or sequels or anything like that. That trailer looks incredible. The pedigree of the talent involved is top-notch. Blade Runner is probably my top 25 or so movies of all time. So, yeah, so make that number one, drop Wonder Woman number two, take Guardians off the list, and all that stuff.
Right. Lots of science goes into these lists.
Yes.
You know, I'm eager to see that because I love the director, and the teaser is interesting, and it seems, you know, you expect nothing less than visual splendor from him by now, and obviously Deakins, but I don't know, I'm a little skeptical about it, just because it's, again, you get into that conversation of who wanted this, you know, like, I guess plenty of fans probably wanted more Blade Runner. If you promise more Blade Runner, then, you know, at least a handful of, not at least a handful, but a lot of people will fill those seats, and, you know, I'll definitely see it in a theater for sure, just because, but I don't know, like, there's just something about it where it's just like, look, Blade Runner was just so unique, like, that was just something that came out of nowhere in a way, and it holds up so well in terms of its visuals, special effects, and just, again, its overall design, and it's just a very special movie, and I kind of liked it being there on its own, and the fact that it hadn't had a sequel since sort of suggested to me, like, okay, well, that's one of the safe ones out there, but in this age, nothing is safe. So, again, it gets back to that thing where it's just like, look, if it's going to happen, then you hope that good people are attached to it, that they check that box, and you just got to hope that it's a good movie, and then you just kind of deal with it. So here's hoping.
Yeah, my apologetic is that if you asked me in the year 2000, let's say, before we were really inundated with a franchise or a sequel of everything, if you asked me what cinematic world would I want to spend some more time in, Blade Runner would probably be in the top three or four or five movies that I would list. Because the strength of that original movie is so much in that world. It's not necessarily the story. So I feel like there's more stories to tell in that world. And and the fact that it's not primarily a Decker story, I feel like is encouraging to me. Because, yeah, I don't really need to see more of what goes on in the details of his life. I feel like there's source material, too, that is kind of untapped. There's more in the Philip K. Dick story, I think, that could probably be pulled out for a movie, so I feel like it's still fertile ground, so there's lots of things. Also, Johan Johansson is doing the score, and I can't imagine, you know, what he's going to do with that Vangelis original material there. So there's just a lot of interesting little things there that way, way, way over overwhelm any kind of, like, well, is this necessary? Questions for me.
Is what you said about you being glad that it's not too steeped in the Deckard character, is part of that because you don't have a lot of faith in Harrison Ford?
No, not at all. No, I just feel like his story is closed out pretty nicely. And then, of course, there's that stupid theory that Ridley Scott perpetuated, that says Deckard is a replicant, which I think, no spoilers, probably maybe a spoiler, I don't know. But I think I've read that he is definitely not in this movie, which is a good thing. So if it disproves that idiotic part of the
the mythos of the original film, then I'm happy, and maybe that makes it necessary. But again, another thing that makes it necessary a little bit is there are so many different versions of the original. So I feel like if we can have a sequel that codifies or cements the mythos of that final cut that Ridley Scott did in 2007, that might, you know, that might help that original stand a little bit taller, because right now it's kind of messy, you know, in terms of what, when you say Blade Runner, what movie are you talking about? Because there's like five to choose from. So I just think it's, go ahead.
Do we know if there's going to be narration in this one?
I hope so. I hope they just repurpose the original Ford narration. Or put Gosling on Lutz and let him do the same. Another big one that I totally forgot to mention.
I'm sorry to step on you here, but just about Blade Runner. Another big reason I'm a little skeptical about this and a little hesitant just about like the idea of it is just that this director, I just love the way he was trending. You know, coming three movies, American movie, like, and Hollywood movies in a row that were fresh, brand new. They felt big in Prisoners and Sicario and Arrival, made in succession, turned around so quickly.
Enemy.
Enemy.
Oh, yeah. Enemy.
That's right. Toss that one in there, too. It's definitely a little less accessible than those movies that I mentioned, but
yeah,
they were just made with such precision and such amazing technical prowess, and they were all very interesting movies, and they gave A-list actors new opportunities to play new characters that were all had a lot of depth, and there was amazing suspense in all of them, and so again, like, that's another big reason why I'm a little kind of so on it, because, I mean, I like the way, I like his trajectory, and, you know, eventually all of these great filmmakers are going to get pulled into a franchise, and that's okay, because they can do great work within those parameters, and he can clearly do great work within that world that Ridley Scott created, but all I'm saying is I kind of wish that he kept doing what he was doing before he did this, but perhaps this is something he really wanted to do and something he was working towards, and so that's what I'll go into it believing.
Well, what's more discouraging about it for me is not the Blade Runner thing, but the Dune thing. He just got announced for a Dune remake, and
right.
So that's for me, that's discouraging. You know, it's one thing if you go make your Batman Begins, but then you turn right around and make the Prestige again, then, yeah, you go do your franchises and do whatever if we keep getting some original stuff every now and then. But, yeah, if you're doing two back-to-back remakes of 80s franchises or, you know, wannabe franchises, then, yeah, that I'll admit that that's a little discouraging. But speaking of great filmmakers that have been co-opted by massive franchises, we also failed to mention Star Wars The Last Jedi in our franchise list. Is that because Rian Johnson's movie would be on your auteur list, or are you part of the haters now? Are you? I mean, Force Awakens was your most anticipated of 2015, I believe. So, is Last Jedi even close?
Yes, it's number one of the year, and it's complicated because it's a franchise, and so I kind of have to put it in this bubble, you know, among these other movies that look great, and you know, if I wasn't making if I wasn't separating them, then who knows if Lord of the Apes and Last Flag Flying wouldn't be on my just overall list. But Last Jedi tops all of it. And I think we should just kind of get it out of the way because we'll be cheating no matter what. So 100%. Yeah, you know, I'm ready for a trailer, man. Like, it's about that time that we get a look at what this movie look and feels like. And we got a Force Awakens teaser, the first one, in November before it, more than a year ahead of its release. And so we're here in February now, and this movie's coming out December 15th. And, you know, maybe it's because we're so fresh off of Rogue One, and Rogue One is still kind of going in terms of its first run, still making a bunch of money for that franchise and for Disney, and God knows they need it. But I don't know. I'm just at a point now where I'm kind of scratching my neck a little bit and getting a little antsy and developing some hives. I need to see some of Last Jedi. And look, I mean, if I was told to wait until December 15th without getting to see a glimpse of anything, then I would say, okay, and I would be there day one seeing the new Star Wars movie. But
yeah, why do we need it? Like, that's the thing. Is like,
because we're spoiled,
the longer,
man.
The longer I have to wait, the happier I am. Because it's we don't need this. This is also my, if I'm honest, look, moment of truth here, I was trying to be cool and play it cool and not have this as my number one, because I don't want to succumb to the hype and be just another statistic. But, dude, like, this is clearly my number one of the year, and I'm so excited to see it. And the thought that I'm this excited and I haven't seen a single frame of the movie is, it's just proof that, like, we don't need trailers. Just give me a Drew Struzan poster or something like
that.
Yeah,
but the Force Awakens trailers were all so awesome that
they were.
I want more. I'm a trailer guy. If they make good trailers, then I'm gonna watch them 1,000 times before and after.
Sure,
I want them,
but guess what? I've watched those Force Awakens trailers as many times after I saw the movie as I did before.
Right. That's
so
what I mean.
It's just like I can appreciate it, you know, with still seeing the actual movie first. But enough of that. I mean, just in general, I think it's funny that there's so much talk about how The Force Awakens was a retread of Star Wars 77 and that it wasn't original and all these other things, that it peddled in nostalgia. But guess what? Here's what I'm excited about in The Last Jedi. A new director coming on board, and the continuing story of Rey and Finn and Poe Dameron. Like, all the things that they set up in that movie, all the mysteries, all the forward momentum of the new characters, that's what's bringing me into this movie, and I feel like that is a testament to the job that J.J. Abrams did in The Force Awakens, that I don't want to see The Last Jedi because I love The Empire Strikes Back. I want to see The Last Jedi because I love the characters that were given to me in the last movie. Are you on the same page?
Yes, for sure. You know what I think is really interesting about this is I knew that there's probably a lot of conversations with a lot of different hats that go into developing this and making this movie, but Rian Johnson gets sole writer director credit on this movie. So it tells me that this is going to be a movie from the guy who made Looper and Brick, and I kind of can't believe that, you know, as a big fan of his movies, I trust him inherently, and he is one of the most enthusiastic filmmakers out there. He's a guy who loves film and loves other people's movies and is obviously a big Star Wars fan. It's always such a thrill as a big fan of the movie podcast Film Spotting to hear him call in with voicemails and chime in on his favorite movies of the year. And so that always gives me a lot of encouragement as a film lover when other filmmakers are so adamant and outspoken about films that they love. And so the fact that you've got a guy like that behind the most beloved movie franchise ever is a really strong sign of encouragement for me personally. But yeah, I just can't wait. You're right. Like that's what Force Awakens stressed so heavily is the new adventures with new characters that we immediately loved. And I would add Kylo Ren to that and what Adam Driver did. And that was just a great new character. So I can't wait to see where they go from here. I can't wait for them to answer a lot of the major questions that we had with Force Awakens, particularly what's going on with Snoke. I can't wait to see what they do.
What's Snoke doing?
Yeah, what's up, Snoke? I can't wait to see how they introduce even more new characters played by interesting actors. So, yeah, and a new John Williams score, man. It's got pretty much everything going for it, and I don't think we need to convince ourselves anymore, and a trailer won't do anything to convince us. Well, it'll probably convince us even more, but we don't need the trailer. We don't need anything at this point. The title, that's the thing. It's like getting the title for this movie a couple of weeks ago got us all jacked up for it, so God knows what a trailer's going to do.
Yeah, and, I mean, J.J. Abrams is on record as saying that he wishes he could have directed this script because it's the best Star Wars script he's ever written or read or something like that. So yeah, the like you said, the fact that it's Rian Johnson doing his thing with the support of Kathleen Kennedy and that whole team, that's really exciting. So now that we've kind of blown the list entirely, let's go through our kind of filmmaker-based list. Do you have a number five?
Man, I've got a bunch here. Like, they just really snuck up on me. I'll make a quick top five, but there are two that I don't know are coming out in 2017 from maybe my two favorite filmmakers working right now. They're slated for 2017, and I don't want to spoil your list by getting these out of the way early, but if it's okay with you, do you mind if I do that?
Go.
Just without going into detail? Okay, so first, Paul Thomas Anderson is now shooting this movie called The Phantom Thread, reportedly called The Phantom Thread, with Daniel Day-Lewis, about the London fashion industry, I think, in like the 1950s or 60s. God knows a new Paul Thomas Anderson movie comes out, and it's my number one of the year, even if there is a Star Wars movie. So, but again, I don't know if that's going to make it in 2017. I really hope it does. And the other one from Steven Spielberg, this movie, The Kidnapping of Edgardo Molitara, whatever. Again, I don't know if it's coming out this year, but it's a new Steven Spielberg movie, so automatically it's at the top. So with those two out of the way, my number five, I'll go with this movie called Mother from Darren Aronofsky, starring Jennifer Lawrence and I think Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer are also in it, but I'm eager to see the next thing from Darren Aronofsky. And his last movie, Noah, I thought was really good, and Black Swan and The Wrestler and everything else he's done. It's just, they've been fascinating, for better or worse, and if he's got a new movie, he's right on that list of I'm there.
Yeah, I just recently found out about this movie, so it didn't make my main list, but yeah, Aronofsky is automatically worth paying attention to. My number five is a new Guillermo del Toro movie, which is surprising since he just had a new one last year, but it's called The Shape of Water, I believe, and I don't know a damn thing about it, but it's del Toro, and every one of his movies is good, so I'm excited, and it's an original something, I think. It may be an adaptation of a book or something, but it's not, you know, it's not Pacific Rim or Hellboy. It's a brand new Del Toro thing, and that's good news for everybody.
Definitely. And my number four, Pixar has two movies coming out this year. One of them is Cars 3. That's not my pick. My pick is Coco, which is another one from Lee Unkrich, who made Toy Story 3 and has been part of the Pixar family for a long time. But this is a movie that will incorporate the Day of the Dead, and I just say, again, like it's sad how automatic some things are for me, where it's just like, look, if they're making it, then I'm seeing it, and I'm not giving it much. I'm not interested in much context beyond that, but. Yeah, Lee Unkrich, Pixar, Day of the Dead, shoot ya.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on board with Coco. I mean, honestly, there was the Cars 3 trailer that was kind of interesting because it looked like Lightning McQueen was dead, and I thought, wow, that's an interesting approach to this kids franchise. And then they released another trailer. And it looks like the exact same thing as the other movies. So I'm not really interested anymore. But Coco is definitely on my list. It didn't make this top five, but yeah, it's Pixar, you know, I mean, they can't go wrong. And yeah, I'm interested to see what Lee Unkrich does with a movie that isn't, you know, in the Toy Story series.
And it's not a sequel, you know, like we're
right,
in a place now where like the Pixar sequels are coming strong, and they did also sort of like re-up on their promise that we're going to make original movies, and this is, you know, one of them clearly, but even as I'm looking forward to more adventures with The Incredibles, and I like Finding Dory a lot, and there's another Toy Story movie on the way, I'm always going to be a little bit more excited about the original stuff.
Yeah, even though The Good Dinosaur sucked. Just kidding.
Yeah, so my number four is, strangely enough, it's from a director that also directed a movie named Mother. It's Bong Joon-ho's Okja, which is about a girl protecting a big monster thing or a big animal. And that's all I know. But Bong Joon-ho is one of my favorite working filmmakers. I wasn't overwhelmed by Snowpiercer. I felt like it was a little bit long, laborious. But it's still, you know, a fascinating movie. But his movie Mother and Memories of Murder and The Host and even his first feature, even Barking Dogs Bite or something like that. I forget the title of it, but I've seen it, and they're all fantastic. This is a guy that he has shades of the Coen brothers in terms of his tone and film grammar. He is just every one of his movies is entirely original and just really imaginative and surprising. And he always takes his plots in interesting, weird directions. So Okja is my number four by Bong Joon-ho.
Very interesting. I need to catch up with his work to really get acquainted with him. My number three is the next movie from Alexander Payne, Downsizing, which comes out December 22nd. And Nebraska was actually my number one the year that movie came out. And I had a number one all year long until I saw Nebraska, and that changed things immediately. And I loved it. It's wonderful. And Alexander Payne, for me, I know you hate him, but for me, he's just, he remains one of just like the freshest and most like just his films are just so endearing and his characters are just so wonderful, and he's writing with Jim Taylor again, which is great. And the plot summary here is a man and his wife who deciding that their lives have gotten out of hand decide to voluntarily have themselves shrunk down. Unfortunately for the man, his wife backs out at the last minute, and it stars Matt Damon, Kristen Wiig, Christoph Waltz, Alec Baldwin, Neil Patrick Harris, and a few others. And that's a lot of stars for Alexander Payne, especially a guy coming off of making a movie with Bruce Dern, June Squibb, and Will Forte, and making it as well as he did. But, you know, he's worked with people like Jack Nicholson and George Clooney and you know, Reese Witherspoon in the past, and has always turned in great work. And the guy is just so consistently good that Downsizing belonged on my top five list.
Boy, that sounds worse than The Good Dinosaur. No, I had no clue he had a new movie, and I do like, I think most of the movies of his that I've seen, and including Nebraska, which may be my favorite of his. So yeah, that's good news. And there's, you know, as I get older, I think I probably appreciate his movies more and more. So that was my number four. My number three is, it's hard to not make it my number one. I mean, this is where we're really getting into, gosh, how do I pick? And that's Edgar Wright's Baby Driver, which seems to be a kind of a step back from the nuttiness and the grandeur of Scott Pilgrim and The World's End. But yeah, Edgar Wright is just one of the most exciting filmmakers alive. Yeah, this is a new movie from his. It's a, as far as I can tell, kind of a British crime movie, from what I understand. But I'm sure that he's going to heighten it to levels that match his previous movies in terms of excitement and visual tricks and things like that. Do you know more about Baby Driver than I do? I'm not even familiar with the cast.
Not really. I just know that the lead is the kid from The Fault in Our Stars and was up for playing young Han Solo, so that should infuriate you immediately. But yeah, look, it's Edgar Wright. He's great, and he's prone to making really good movies, and is basically hitting, is batting 1,000, you know? Like, I mean, basically every movie he's made has been really good, so I have all the expectations that Baby Driver will follow suit. But also in the cast are Kevin Spacey and Jamie Foxx and John Hamm and Lily James, so it's got a lot going for it, to be sure. Bill Pope is the cinematographer, so that's
cool.
So my number two is this guy's coming out of retirement. They're playing his music.
Oh.
Steven Soderbergh's new movie, Logan Lucky, coming out. We thought he was done with Side Effects. Nobody thought he was done with Side Effects. I mean, he announced this retirement, and we knew that we were going to get a movie in like 5 minutes after that retirement. And, you know, this is after he makes, spends all this time making The Nick for Cinemax, and God knows we need Steven Soderbergh making movies. I don't care what it's about. I don't care who's in it, because the guy is just brilliant and makes, you know, I hate to borrow the Stone Cold Steve Austin phrase I'm sure you're familiar with, but I'll just say lemonade out of lemons. But, I mean, geez, aren't you, I'm guessing this is on your list, but aren't you just so happy that Soderbergh is back?
This is not on my list, because I keep forgetting, because I keep...
Oh, my
God. It should be. It would just definitely be in my top five. Yes, I'm very excited. I've loved everything that Soderbergh has done, and he is still on a streak somehow. He retired and continued his streak, because both Behind the Candelabra and the first season of The Nick, which I've seen, I haven't seen the second season, but both of those are pretty great. So he's still a great director while not being a director at all. And yeah, I'm happy he's back to movies, because movies are better than TV. I think that this is really exciting. The only thing I've kind of seen of this is a picture of Daniel Craig as a redneck. He's got like blonde, ruddy hair, and it looks awesome. He just looks, that kind of casting is exactly what you hope for with Steven Soderbergh. It's a heist movie about NASCAR, and I feel like that's there's so much room there for Soderbergh to have fun with. It should definitely be in my top five, which
done.
I keep.
And
this is the messiest list or series of lists I've ever made.
Yeah, and apparently Daniel Craig's character's name is Joe Bang. So
perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, great pick. Thanks for reminding me of that. So my number two is Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk, which, you know, it's Christopher Nolan, and he's making a war movie, and that sounds pretty awesome. And then the trailers have been suitably haunting, and this is a story that I think, we learned a little bit about it, those of us that didn't already know about this particular World War II battle, but we learned a little bit about it in Joe Wright's Atonement. But I feel like it is a very ripe situation for a movie story. And the cast here is incredible. There's a few moments in the trailer that really give me chills. So yeah, just the humanity that Nolan brings to his movies, which I defy all the people that say that he makes cold, emotionless movies. There is a tenderness and humanity to his movies, especially his last movie, Interstellar, that I'm really excited to see him, you know, inject in this. I don't expect this to be just a technical exercise, but I feel like this could be something really special, because, you know, Nolan doesn't just make a genre movie. He makes a genre movie and then adds something to it. So I'm excited to see what universal truth he pulls out from this difficult situation, this difficult true story.
It's my number one, and I can't believe that it's not your number one, and I can't wait to hear what yours is. But yeah, you nailed it, and it's Christopher Nolan. I love most of this, if not all of this guy's movies. And you know, it's interesting. It's like he's telling a very specifically British World War II story, something that we don't see much of, especially in the American studio system. So I think that's interesting unto itself. And I mean, the guy just goes bigger and bigger and bigger in terms of scale and the movies he makes and the ambition that he brings to it. And he sets a really great standard, I think, for other filmmakers and other studios for that matter to sort of think bigger, but actually think while you're, not go bigger, but think bigger. And that's something that he clearly brings to the table. And you know, what's interesting is, you know, he's made movies that have a lot of violence in them, but I think that he tends to not let the violence get in the way of the story. And this is going to, like, just based on the premise in this real thing that happened, it's an incredibly violent story, and it's an incredibly tragic and sad story. So I'll be interested to see how he handles that and how he blends that into this in seeking that humanity, because I think that it seems to be, for me, something that he has tried to avoid in stuff like Inception and even his Batman movies, which obviously stress where he had a lead character that didn't kill, you know, and he in many ways, in my opinion, tried to avoid it altogether. So to me, it'll be interesting to see what he does, because, I mean, he has made movies that have incorporated it and have been a main theme, like Memento and like Insomnia. So I'm anxious to see what he does here. But, yeah, based on what we've seen so far, the trailer looks amazing, and he's got another great cast, including Tom Hardy and Mark Rylance, you know, coming off of Bridge of Spies and the BFG, and it's good to see him get work with other premier directors like Nolan on top of Spielberg. So, yeah, Dunkirk. Dunkirk's it.
Yeah, I mean, Rylance has one of those lines in the trailer that gives me chills. But, yeah, that's an interesting point about Nolan and violence, because whenever he does depict violence, it's always very upsetting. You know, I mean, you think about the climax of The Prestige, and it is just, he makes it count. So that's interesting to see what he's going to do when he's depicting this thing that is, you know, the most violent situation of any of his movies. Interesting. Well, wait, so what was your number two, if that was your number one?
Logan Lucky.
Oh, okay. Well, we're all out of order here. But so my number one is a cheat based on your criteria earlier, because while I do think that the Paul Thomas Anderson has, I'm curious to see if he's able to turn that around quickly. He does usually take a little bit more time with his movies. Steven Spielberg, he cranks these things out. So if he's shooting now, he'll have it done by award season. So yeah, so the kidnapping of Edgardo Mortara is my number one. As much of it that's about Spielberg is also about Tony Kushner. This is the third Spielberg movie that has been written by Kushner, the first two being Munich, which is in my top 10 Spielbergs, and Lincoln, which is, you know, an amazing screenplay. And I feel like this pair is, they're just one of those, you know, it's like Fincher and Sorkin, you know, it's like one of the, it's like a pairing that you just want to see over and over and over again. They apparently come from a similar place, spiritually or intellectually or something, because they vibe so well together. But they also make, the first two movies are such complex movies about nationalism. And then this movie is kind of possibly Spielberg's first attempt at a movie about religion. I believe it's about a Jewish kid that is kidnapped and converted to Christianity, which is an interesting approach and potentially incendiary in certain ways. So there's a lot of moral complexity that's going on here. But of course you also have the typical Spielberg themes that are apparent here of a child seeking home, or a family seeking, reconciliation. So I feel like it's Spielberg. It's ripe for his interpretation, but also it seems like he's going in some really new and interesting directions. And I mean, he's shooting it now, so he'll probably cut it next week, and we'll get a release by Memorial Day.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, when you go back to 2005 and consider how quickly he turned around Munich after he had made War of the Worlds, you have to expect the guy who he can work at a clip that no other can.
He made War of the Worlds in like 9 months. I mean, they started shooting that less than a year before the release date.
Yeah, so
he's a machine.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, it belongs at the top. And look, there are a few here honorable mentions that I want to mention, because we're getting movies from some really great filmmakers. And while I'm not the biggest Gore Verbinski fan in the world, I think that this movie, Cure for Wellness, coming out here in a couple of weeks, actually looks really interesting. And Dane DeHaan, I can't believe that, you know, they're pushing a movie the way that they are and have Super Bowl ads. And for a movie that looks so weird and dark, starring a guy like Dane DeHaan, but they're doing it, and it looks like one of the more interesting things Gore Verbinski has made in a while. So,
yeah,
that's an honor.
Absolutely.
And then you've got this apparently untitled Catherine Bigelow, Mark Boll movie starring John Boyega about social uprising in Detroit.
And yeah, God, I mean, like, I love their movies that they've made together, and toss John Boyega in there and you've got a sure thing, seemingly. And you've got a new movie from Sofia Coppola too, called The Beguiled. So we're just getting spoiled here, man. Like, I mean, you told me, and this typically happens, you know, where you've got these years where you're getting movies from your favorite filmmakers. I mean, all of that that's missing that I'm seeing right now is, like, where's the Wes Anderson movie, you know? Like,
yeah, Wes Anderson, Coens, Scorsese. That's what we're missing.
Okay, there you go. And we got, you know, and we got movies from them last year, or Scorsese and the Coens anyway. So, fair enough. But, I mean, if you're telling me we're getting movies from Spielberg, Paul Thomas Anderson, Christopher Nolan, Steven Soderbergh, Alexander Payne, Darren Aronofsky, Sofia Coppola, Catherine Bigelow, not to mention all of these insane franchises.
Like, I've got another. Thomas Alfredson has a new movie coming out called The Snowman. It narrowly missed my top five. That's another one I forgot to mention. I don't either, but it's Thomas Alfredson, and he's great. So, he's on that list with PTA and Spielberg and those guys. A few others that I should mention. I'm a fan of Joseph Kosinski. He's got a movie called Granite Mountain about firefighters, which is interesting. It's not a sci-fi movie. But I really liked Tron Legacy, and I really loved Oblivion. Aaron Sorkin has a directorial debut in a movie called Molly's Game, which is interesting. And I'm assuming he wrote that. Have you heard anything about Molly's Game?
No, I just know that it's got a good cast, and Aaron Sorkin's debut as a director. So that's interesting. And one quick one, a movie that's scheduled for March 2017, and I haven't seen anything on it. I don't know if it's really coming out. And I'm a little worried about the director, but one of my favorite movies from 2011 was Goon, or 2012, Goon, the hockey comedy. It snuck up on me, and it's just really great, and it's held up, and it's amazing rewatchability. Its sequel, Goon, Last of the Enforcers, is scheduled to come out this spring, and everybody's back, like Sean William Scott and Liev Schreiber and so many people who made up the great cast of the first movie. But it's directed by Jay Baruchel, who admittedly he co-wrote the first Goon movie, so all the credit to him for that. But I've never seen Jay Baruchel direct a movie, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic for the sequel to one of my favorite movies in recent years.
Alex Garland of Ex Machina has another movie called Annihilation, which sounds great. And then the one last directorial debut, we have Jordan Peele's Get Out, which has a really, really cool trailer and has gotten some really good buzz, I think, at Sundance. And it's just like this guy he may be one of the most talented guys in Hollywood, and so the idea of him directing is really fun, and just a comedy guy making a horror movie, somebody that is so prone to dealing with expectation and surprise in comedy, it makes perfect sense that person could also deal with expectation and surprise in a horror movie. And of course, there's so many Key and Peele skits that, you know, work cinematically and deal with tension and awkward turns. So, yeah, I feel like Get Out could be something really special.
Definitely. I love that trailer, and you're right. It's crazy to see him directing a movie, you know, especially after they quit that show and following Keanu, which is a really, you know, really fun little comedy. But I had no idea that we were going to get movies directed by Jordan Peele, too, and I loved what I saw. And it was also shot in Alabama, too.
Oh, yeah, I did not know that. Perfect. So it's going to be a big year, clearly. I'm like I said, this was a messy list to make, and trying to pare these down just to 5 or 10 is very tough. So I'm excited. 2016 was marketed as the worst year of all time, so maybe things are looking up.
Yeah, and I still haven't finished 2016, so I wish 2017 would hold up and wait on this before I sit
down. Yeah, absolutely. Some of these are coming out very soon. So, yep, we've got a lot of work ahead of us.
Yeah, but fuck Flatliners, man.
What's up, film nerds? This is Matt Scalisi, and these are my three most anticipated movies of 2017. This is a long list this year, This is a pretty good looking year on paper right now. And the most exciting thing as I look at the three that I singled out are that they're all in the back half of the year, which is pretty fun. I mean, I've got stuff to look forward to that I'm really excited about through the entire calendar, not just the summer. So these are in chronological order of release date rather than preference or anything. August, we get Baby Driver, which is the new film from Edgar Wright, who to me is just a consistently exciting filmmaker. Every movie he's made is just holds up on repeat viewings over and over again. They're just so great, and I think he's one of the most exciting filmmakers we have working today. I'm thrilled to see what he does next. In November, early November actually, we get Thor Ragnarok, and I really could have gone with any of the three Marvel movies coming out this year, but I went with this one because I think it's the most out there sounding Marvel movie that studio has made so far. Just a bizarre premise with a lot of great actors thrown in there playing outrageous characters, and it's directed by Taika Waititi, who is a comedy director, a really funny comedy director. So it's a very strange project, and I'm really interested to see how it turns out. And my last one is kind of a no-brainer, but I would be lying if I didn't have this on my list, and it is Star Wars The Last Jedi. I am still kind of on my emotional honeymoon from The Force Awakens, and I am just thrilled to get back to that story and see it continue to play out. I'm really excited about this movie, and I'm you know, waiting for some kind of tidbit to show me what kind of direction it's going and what I can expect. We still haven't gotten a trailer as of middle of February here, but I'm pumped for it and will be all year. So those are my three most anticipated of 2017, but there's a ton of great movies coming out this year, and I'm really excited about it.
Hello, film nerd community. Happy 2017. It is I, Franco Esmile, from the Dawn of the Dad podcast, coming at you with 12 of my most anticipated 2017 movies. I'll make it fast. Don't worry. In no particular order, first one is Mary Shelley, directed by Haifa Al-Mansour. She did Wajida a few years ago. She is the first Saudi Arabian female director ever. Wajida was tremendous, and the story is about a love affair between Mary Shelley and someone else and how it inspired her to write Frankenstein. So that sounds pretty cool. Next up is The Florida Project, which is directed by Sean Baker, who did Tangerine a few years ago, and I love that movie, and it stars Willem Dafoe. Sorry, school bell. It stars Willem Dafoe as a, he has a six-year-old girl. They're at Disney World, and her parents are struggling. I assume he's a part of it. I don't know much about the movie. You could say that about a lot of the movies I'm choosing, but I like directors, so I'm going by that. Next up is War Machine, directed by David Michaud, who directed the Australian movie Animal Kingdom, and a couple years ago, The Rover. I like both of those very much for different reasons. And this one stars Brad Pitt, and it's about the so-called runaway general who was put in charge of the war in Afghanistan by President Obama, but who quickly alienated his allies and bosses. So Brad Pitt usually picks good movies to be in, or at least that's my opinion, so that's cool. The next is a movie called The Death of Stalin, and it is directed by the dude who did In the Loop, Armando Iannucci, and so I like political films, and this is a synopsis. After the death of Soviet leader Joseph Stalin in 1953, his underlings jockey for power and deal with the fallout. So I like political satire, and I'm kind of obsessed with the Soviet Union. It's one of my things that I like to read about. So The next one is called How to Talk to Girls at Parties, directed by John Cameron Mitchell. So just that alone is like intriguing. And this stars Elle Fanning, and it's kind of like a coming of age 1970s movie, but then aliens come in. So that's interesting. Next up is a movie called Mudbound, directed by Dee Reese, who directed Pariah a few years back. This is takes place in the 40s. White guy, black guy in the South become friends, and you know, stuff happens. One of my other hobbies to read about lately has been reading about the Black American experience. So this is in line with that. And the next one up is called The Killing of a Sacred Deer, directed by my boy Yorgos Lanthimos, director of the Dogtooth and the Lobster, which I like both very much. This one also stars Colin Farrell, and it's got Alicia Silverstone and Nicole Kidman, so that's cool. The synopsis is a surgeon takes a young boy under his wing, only for the boy to turn out to be more sinister than he imagined. Okay, let's do it. So that is The Killing of a Sacred Deer. The next one is Logan Lucky. It is Steven Soderbergh's movie. He came out of retirement, not that he ever was in, really. And that's enough said. I love him as a director. After that is a movie called You Were Never Really Here, directed by Lynn Ramsey, who's awesome. And starring my favorite working actor, Joaquin Phoenix. Yeah, I think he is. The next up is The Beguiled, directed by Sofia Coppola, who is a really cool voice, even though she's hit or miss, I guess. But this one takes place during the Civil War, and an injured Union soldier hides out in a girls' boarding school in Mississippi. So that's really weird. And Sofia Coppola is an artist, so let's go for it. Next up, Wonderstruck, directed by one of my favorite working directors, Todd Haynes. Carol is one of my favorite movies ever. And this has Julianne Moore and Michelle Williams and Tom Noonan. So that's really great. And it's, I'm not sure what the movie's about, but it takes place in 1927, so that'll be fun. And last but not least, the untitled PTA Daniel Day-Lewis fashion world drama, because how could I not be anticipating that? Thank you. Have a great 2017.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.